Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. France hosting an international conference to promote a two-state solution for peace in the Middle East. Delegates from more than 70 countries are attending the Paris meeting to state their opposition to Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories, including East Jerusalem. Neither Israeli nor Palestinian representatives are attending the meeting, and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the Paris meeting is futile and rigged. He said the conference is among the last spasms of yesterday's world. Tomorrow will look different, and tomorrow is very close. Last month, the United States took the historic step of abstaining from a vote in the UN Security Council condemning Israel for its settlements in Palestinian territory. Days before the U.S. holiday honoring civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr., President-elect Donald Trump has attacked Congressman John Lewis on Twitter after Lewis, a civil rights legend in his own right, said he does not consider Mr. Trump a legitimate president due to what he believes were Russia's attempts to help candidate Trump win the presidency. In a couple of tweets, Mr. Trump said instead of criticizing him, the lawmaker should concentrate on serving his constituents. Leading up to the president-elect's inauguration, demonstrations against several campaign promises have already begun in Washington.
You may switch presidents, but we just gonna switch legs and keep on marching. We won't back down.
The Reverend Al Sharpton, who led one particular march, there were also rallies supporting immigrant and minority rights. This is VOA News. Officials in Afghanistan say that at least seven civilians were killed and two wounded when their vehicle hit a roadside bomb in Nangarhar province, which shares a border with Pakistan. The violence happened just hours before Islamic State militants in the same region abducted 13 seminary teachers. It was not immediately clear who planted the bomb in a region where the Taliban actively conducts insurgent activities. Gambia's president-elect Adama Barrow has met in Mali with world leaders trying to arrange a peaceful outcome of the country's leadership crisis. Barrow was officially declared the winner of last month's election by a slim margin. Yahya Jammeh, who has been in power in Gambia since a coup in 1994, originally accepted defeat but then reversed himself and filed suit to challenge the results, citing voting irregularities. The Economic Community of West African States intends to seek the formal approval of the UN Security Council to deploy troops there if Jammeh refuses to step down as scheduled this week. Syrian rebel negotiators have announced their support for Russia-Turkey brokered talks aimed at finding a political solution to the six-year-long civil war in Syria, but they say a planned meeting later this month should be seen only as a first step towards the resumption of the long-stalled UN-backed Geneva peace process. The Syrian opposition's High Negotiations Committee, which has been shut out of the Russia-Turkey talks, said it backs a military delegation to attend the talks. The president of the Philippines is threatening martial law for his country. Speaking to members of the Chamber of Commerce, Rodrigo Duterte said if the war on drugs descends into something really, really very virulent, then he would declare martial law. No one would be able to stop me, he said. He also said the aim of such a move would be to preserve the Filipino people and the youth of his land. The controversial president has pledged to wipe out illegal drugs. In the first 6 months of his drug crackdown, nearly 6,000 people have been killed by police and vigilante squads, drawing criticism from human rights groups, the United Nations, and U.S. President Barack Obama. The private space exploration company SpaceX has conducted its first successful launch since the explosion of a rocket on the launch pad in September. SpaceX sent a rocket into space Saturday from Vandenberg Air Force Base, California, and landed the first stage mechanism successfully on a barge in the Pacific. Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus announced Saturday the greatest show on Earth will close forever in May after 146 years. Company executives cited high operating costs and declining ticket sales, and the American Circus retired its elephants. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Evidence is really convincing that, you know, anything beyond recognizing the facts is like forcing the will of ECOWAS on a sovereign nation that has its right to settle its internal affairs without their intervention.
Gambian President Yahya Jammeh calls for fresh elections after rejecting calls from regional leaders to step down.
English-speaking Cameroonians having a strong feeling that there is a francophonization of one of the two cultures in the country.
Cameroonian groups express concern about growing social tension in parts of the country.
I think the issue in South Sudan is not lack of knowledge of what should be done. I think both the African Union and IGAD have done their best.
And fresh talks would soon be held in Doha to find solutions to resolve the crisis in South Sudan. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Embattled Gambian President Yahya Jammeh says the only way to resolve the political stalemate is for fresh elections to be organized by the Independent Electoral Commission. This following a meeting with West African regional leaders led by Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. The leaders urged Jammeh to peacefully hand over power to President-elect Adama Barrow, a request Jammeh defiantly rejected. I read Samsudeen Sarr, the acting Gambian permanent representative at the United Nations, about the latest development in his country.
I thought by now I have convinced you after showing you all the facts behind the reason, you know, he changed his mind, which was the subject of controversy all along. Because people had always given the impression to the world that he changed his mind without any definitive reason. Nonetheless, there are, and I believe this time the mediating committee really took their time and took a good look at the evidence. And the evidence is really convincing that, you know, anything beyond recognizing the facts is like forcing the will of ECOWAS on a sovereign nation that has its right to settle its internal affairs without their intervention.
The African Union has stated that it will cease to recognize President Yahya Jammeh on the 19th when Adama Barrow, the president-elect, is scheduled to be officially installed as the next president. How do you address this challenge?
It's a big challenge, of course, and we are hoping that they will not really go along and do exactly that, because it's not going to be fair at all to the Gambians and the whole world, because this is very uncharacteristic of a world body where they take a position without really looking at the facts that should back their decision. I don't know why they did that, because at the time they even took this decision, the mediators were still in the Gambia looking at the fact they should have at least waited to see what they would come out with. Just like I always say, the Security Council took a position on the 10th of December, well before the fact-finding mission came to the Gambia to find out why Jammeh changed his mind. So the whole problem is, like I always tell you, the Senegalese government is aggressively against this drive to ensure that Jammeh leaves office, period.
ECOWAS heads of state say they will be in Banjul to witness the swearing-in of Adama Barrow as the next president. Wouldn't there be confrontation following what President Yahya Jammeh has said, that he would defend his country from any foreign aggression or any interference in the internal affairs of the Gambia?
Well, if there is any confrontation, I would think that it would be something initiated by the African heads of state, because if you are denied entry in my country, under these conditions, and you want to force yourself. Look, Peter, let's be realistic. Even the issue of the courts, where we try to use the judges from West Africa to come and take a look at the evidence, You know, we were expecting them. Gambia was expecting them. But all of a sudden, we learned that there is an effort by governments in the sub-region to discourage the lawyers from even coming to take a look at the evidence. Now, all these things are showing a pattern of hostility, which I believe is not really helping the situation. I believe it's going to be cheaper, more reasonable. And this situation where there is a state of emergency, that the whole world, not only West Africa, but the African Union, come together with judges and say, go and take a look at this.
Will Adama Barrow be allowed to return to the Gambia to be sworn in, since he left for the meeting in Mali, Bamako, at the heads of state meeting there? Will he be allowed? Because some people are expressing concern that, looking at President Yahya Jammeh's stance so far, he is likely to prevent the plane carrying Adama Barrow to return to the Gambia.
I believe if letting Adama Barrow into the country will create the chaos we are trying to avoid, which might probably undermine the national security of the country eventually. If preventing him from coming in is going to stop that, I believe any rational person will do that. Otherwise, I mean, like, but if, you know, allowing him come in and with the situation still orderly, I believe they will let him in.
On January 19th, President Yahya Jammeh, in the world's eye, some people have said, becomes a rebel leader. And all his appointees, including you, will not be accepted in the countries that you are posted to, with no diplomatic cover. How are you going to address this problem?
Well, apparently, it's really disturbing, because I don't know whether you saw Mr. Chambers' press release, where my name was even mentioned at the Security Council level, that why would they even endorse me as the PR of the Gambia? And it's been said that, you know, I am not going to be endorsed. But you see, like, Peter, I believe in what I believe in, that this is a delicate matter where, you know, once again, like Iraq, like Libya, the whole international community supported an agenda where later they turn out and realize that they were all wrong.
Samsudeen Sarr is the acting Gambian permanent representative to the UN. He spoke with me from New York. Cameroonian civil society and opposition groups have called on President Paul Biya to expedite action to resolve the social tension in part of the country. The tension, they say, has led to clashes between security agencies and citizens who are displeased with what they say is the meddling of the educational and the judicial system of the English-speaking parts of the country. To learn more about the situation, I reached Nana Walter Wilson, a journalist with Media Freak, an independent media company in Boya, in Cameroon.
Cameroon has a country of English and French cultures, and these are heritages we inherited from our colonial masters. And issues about how the English educational system and the legal system in Cameroon are supposed to work have been on the table for a while, with English-speaking Cameroonians having a strong feeling that there is a francophonization of one of the two cultures in the country. And so it has raised a lot of problems in government circles, whereby English-speaking Cameroonians think that it is getting too far and it has to stop by giving a new orientation to the English system of education and the French system of education.
What necessitated this strong suspicion from English-speaking Cameroon? Because the last time I checked, Cameroon is a bilingual country, French and English.
You come to some of our schools in the English part of the country, especially in the northwest and in the southwest regions of Cameroon. There's a classroom where a teacher is supposed to be teaching, for example, chemistry in the English language in a school that is English-oriented. But you find a teacher of chemistry in French. In some cases, the teacher will be teaching in broken English or in Pidgin English, which is not the official language of the country.
Has President Paul Biya's government taken any policy direction to address some of these suspicions or some of these happenings in the educational system, and particularly in their legal system? Because the last time I checked also, the English-speaking lawyers are refusing to go to work, and some of the courts are not opening as well.
As we speak now, the courts are not open. Government has been taking action in the sense that ad hoc committees have been set up by the government to see how these problems can be corrected. Because these are problems that have been on for more than 55 years of the reunification of French-speaking Cameroon and English-speaking Cameroon. And so government has been taking measures to see how these magistrates of French-speaking background operating in the English system, which they do not understand and even do not speak English in the courtroom, they have to be redeployed.
There were reports of some cases of violence as a result of this described social tension. How credible are these reports?
No, of course, I will tell you that as a journalist in Cameroon, covering the development and looking for the most credible information, there have been violence in the northwest region of Cameroon and in the southwest region of Cameroon, where I am, where you had the population, some of them, getting very excited and, of course, again, receiving information from the social media, which is incorrect. A lot of disinformation is circulated on the social media in Cameroon, and people get the wrong information, and before you know, they are already in the streets. And in the process of that confrontation and provocation with the police, the gendarmes, there is an opening of fire. And so we've had a number of people who have died because of security or confrontation with the population. And it is because the population, to a large extent, do not have the right information because individuals are sitting in their bedrooms, sitting in their little corner and sending wrong information on the WhatsApp and letting Cameroonians go out to the street and have confrontation with the security officers.
What role are religious leaders and traditional leaders who play key roles in the society, you know, what roles are they playing to resolve the social tension?
I will tell you straight up, the bishops of the English-speaking part of Cameroon have sent a memorandum to the President of the Republic, Mr. Paul Biya, detailing the source of this problem, how it has evolved, and what can be done to bring a perfect solution to these problems. The memorandum has been forwarded to the President of the Republic and even made public to Cameroonians to read. And all Cameroonians have realized that if the government with a level head can sit down and take these points one after the other from the bishops, from the English-speaking part from Cameroon and even the French-speaking part of Cameroon, this issue will come to an end.
Nana Walter Wilson is a journalist with Media Freak, an independent media company. He spoke with me from Buea in Cameroon. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kaboni Beni, a top youth activist, has been released after being arrested nearly a month ago. Despite his treatment in detention, Beni says he will not back down or cease from calling for President Joseph Kabila to stand down after his mandate ended last month. For VOA, William Klaus has the latest from the Congolese capital, Kinshasa.
On December 13th, Carbon Beni, a leader in the youth group Filimbi, and four fellow activists attempted to hand over a memo to the DRC's top politicians, who were involved in negotiations overseen by the Catholic Church. They wished to urge the participants to respect the constitution and encourage President Kabila to step down on December 19th, the end of his second and final term.
À notre arrivée, il y avait une préparation, quelque chose qui était déjà.
Beni told reporters on Friday that on their arrival at the Catholic Church's headquarters, authorities already had prepared to abduct the five of them and to not allow them to experience what was going to happen on December 19th, a historic day in which the president was to have stepped down as per the constitution. In the absence of elections, which should have taken place last November, Kabila did not leave power at the end of his mandate. Security forces killed at least 34 people during protests in several Congolese cities in the days following December 19th, according to Human Rights Watch. Beni describes Kabila's continuing occupation of the presidency as a constitutional coup d'etat. He says that after being held for 2 weeks at a military camp, they were then transferred to the ANR, the National Intelligence Agency.
Donc il y avait beaucoup de gens dans une cellule qui pouvait contenir 4 personnes, il y en avait 12, 13, 14, 15.
Beni described conditions at the camp as atrocious, saying that between 12 and 15 people were held in cells designed for four. He said there was no food and no shower and that he went 2 weeks without washing.
Je devais répondre à des questions chaque jour, je devais discuter chaque jour sur
Benny says the ANR questioned him almost every day about Filimbi's alleged plans against the government and how he represents a danger to the country. He insists, however, that every aspect of Filimbi's struggle is non-violent, peaceful and non-partisan. Last Wednesday, Benny was suddenly released. The other four activists remain in detention. Benny says he remains as committed as ever.
Je tiens personnellement en tant que jeune.
He said he wants to once more mobilize the entire Congolese youth, to mobilize Congolese citizens so that they can continue what they started. Benny said that they cannot lose hope because perhaps they are experiencing the same reality they experienced last year. He denounced the arrests, intimidation, and inhumane treatment, which he said aims to make the DRC's youth back down. Human Rights Watch's 2016 country report states that more than 30 activists and political prisoners remain in detention. According to the rights group, political violence and government repression intensified in 2016 as President Joseph Kabila clung to power beyond his constitutionally mandated two-term limit. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
The United Kingdom and Norway are sponsoring fresh talks in Doha to find a solution to the crisis in South Sudan. Former Affairs Vice President Dr. Riek Machar is expected to be part of the talks. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir replaced Machar following a fallout. But the violence continues despite assurances by the government in Juba that the country remains peaceful. For reaction about the new talks, I reached Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
I have a bias in the sense that I believe African states have the capacity to resolve African questions by themselves. I think the issue in South Sudan is not lack of knowledge of what should be done. I think both the African Union and IGAD have done their best. The agreements are sound. The problem is that the parties are not willing to implement those agreements. So the question is, how do you get the parties to implement it?
So you don't think the UK and the Norway, part of the TRICA, wouldn't be able to put pressure on these two main rivals in South Sudan to resolve their problem once and for all and save their people?
Well, you know, Peter, you know, all my throughout my career for 35 years, I've been a major negotiator of the United Nations. That developed a theory during the time of Kissinger that you have to have individuals or states that have the capacity to compensate people to implement agreements. Maybe from that point of view, the UK entry into it makes some sense. But frankly, it will not change the issue. What you have from IGAD and the African Union are the best you can do. The problem is that they are refusing to implement it. And then we have another curious situation, which when the United States representative suggested that you can proceed without Riek Machar, yes, who is supposed to be under house arrest in South Africa. It doesn't make any sense. How can you solve the problem of South Sudan without Riek Machar? You don't have to agree with him. That's the reality of South Sudan.
President Salva Kiir has said that his first vice president, Thabang Dengai, is working with him and they are trying to implement the peace process. You doubt that. Why?
Let me tell you, I've been involved with South Sudan since when I was in the UN, before the peace agreement with the Sudan. I know these people enough. That's nonsense. You cannot deal with South Sudan problem trying to isolate Riek Machar. You cannot do it. I know these people. If they try to, I want to call a quick fix, it will not last. It will not last. And people have to come to that reality that you must bring all of the parties together. Look, at the heart of the problem of South Sudan is an ethnic problem, ethnic rivalry. So you don't do that by ignoring one major party.
So should we expect this crisis to continue?
No, I don't think it can continue. I think what the UK and the major powers could have done is to lend their strong support to implement the agreement which has been concluded between the parties in South Sudan.
But in this case, they categorically stated that Riek Machar should be part of this talks. You tend to agree with that?
Yes, I agree. The problem, let us see what was the problem. You know, President Salva Kiir was very, very honest in saying he has reservation about the agreement. Okay, he went ahead, but with reservation. And then we have the problem of security. Okay, Riek Machar came to South Sudan. The disagreement. Why they felt that Riek Machar was planning to run for the presidency. You know in Africa what it means to run for the presidency. So there are, on both sides, maybe people who don't like each other. But the question is that it's not only Riek Machar who has caused the problem of Salva Kiir. Is that this rivalry is there. So I really don't think that unless you get the people to agree, that the agreement is good. It's not a bad agreement. It is just has to be implemented. And when you go ahead and create new governor's states, that's not sincere. It creates doubt in the minds of other people. So from my point of view, if the UK wants to take the agreement and try to convince both sides that they should implement it and give them the means, okay. But I don't think you are going to find new terms to satisfy both sides. At the bottom is a struggle for power between two ethnic groups.
Dr. James Jonah is a former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. He spoke with me from New York. Meanwhile, the South Sudanese Army, or the SPLA, says it recovered more than 1,200 guns in the past 2 weeks during a search in the capital, Juba. Deputy SPLA spokesperson Colonel Santo Dominic Chol says security agents realized that most of the weapons were recovered from lawmakers, retired army officers and politicians who are licensed to carry weapons. Some Juba residents, however, say the illegal weapons roundup has helped improve security in the city because they no longer hear gunshots at night. For VOA, Tito Justin reports from Juba.
Chol says security personnel conducted day and night searches before and after the holiday season on road patrols. Agents also laid ambushes on suspected criminal routes in the capital. Chol describes some of the areas security forces secured before the exercise and what items were searched.
City entrance and outlets, residential areas and the markets. Secure all the government installations, including main roads, roundabouts, and the airport. Search for unauthorized firearms in the vehicles and in the houses. Arrest vehicles and motorbikes without plate number and without logbooks. Arrest unauthorized screen-shaded vehicles.
The guns collected include PKM or machine guns, AKMs or Kalashnikov, grenades and pistols. Chol says all confiscated weapons are being kept at the SPLA headquarters or at Presidential Guard headquarters until the government issues further orders. He says most of the guns will be returned to their rightful owners because they are licensed weapons. But security forces will investigate how 400 unauthorized guns got into the hands of civilians.
The operation was done professionally, and I would like really to take this opportunity on behalf of the Chief of Staff of the SPLA, General Paul Mulungawan, to congratulate all the combined forces for the well done job, and this has actually saved the image of the SPL and all the organized forces.
During the exercise, 3 people were killed, a soldier, a police officer, and a civilian were shot dead. Chol says a scuffle broke out when agents tried to confiscate a gun from a soldier they mistook for a civilian. He says security officers intercepted and arrested 20 civilians carrying forged identity cards of various security agencies, including the SPLA. Juba resident Bosco Diodone says after the weapons roundup, he feels more secure.
People now have normal movement a bit at night, maybe chaos whereby there used to be insecurities. Necessary gunshots at least have stopped. I feel safe because if where I'm staying there's no gun, there's no gunshot, I feel as if I'm really in a secure place. I think it has really created some ways forward for peace.
Ajuang Michael Ball, another Juba resident, urges Juba authorities to educate civilians on the danger of carrying illegal weapons. Michael says sometimes civilians don't surrender their guns because they feel insecure and vulnerable to gunmen who rob and kill in the night.
You know, some people feel suspicious that if my gun is removed, maybe it is being removed as something to defeat and other things like that one. Like if my neighbor guns is removed and my gun is not removed, my neighbor will feel insecure. So it is good to sensitize past. Then we believe there wouldn't be this rampant killing and people are dying. This is not good in a country.
in 2014, the South Sudan Army collected hundreds of guns in and around Juba. Chol says an investigation is underway to determine how the guns collected made their way back into the civilian population. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's begin with boxing. The super middleweight unification fight between Great Britain's James DeGale and Sweden's Badou Jack ended in a controversial majority draw. Jack was knocked down in the first round, but ended strongly and floored DeGale in the last round in New York. One of the judges gave the decision to DeGale by 114 to 112, but the other two scored it 113 to 113, meaning both fighters retained their world titles. Floyd Mayweather, who promotes Jack, called the decision bad for boxing. DeGale, who is 30, suffered damage to his eardrum and teeth during the contest, but wanted a rematch with the 33-year-old. DeGale has now won 23 times, drawn once, and lost once as a professional, while Jack failed to win for only the fourth time in his 24-fight career. The British fighter was making the third defense of his IBF belt and made a bright start, knocking Jack down with a straight left inside the opening 3 minutes. But Jack got back into this contest and had success with a number of body shots in the sixth round, and dislodged DeGale's gum shield with an uppercut in the eighth round, which later led to DeGale losing one of his front teeth. Former five-weight world champion Mayweather said Jack would not fight DeGale again and would move up a weight instead. And in soccer, the Africa Cup of Nations kicked off Saturday in Gabon with a host, Gabon being held to a 1-1 draw by Guinea-Bissau. Burkina Faso also drew with Cameroon 1-1. Algeria takes on Zimbabwe on Sunday, as well as Tunisia taking on Senegal later in the day. But the talk here in Kampala is the opening team's Uganda Cranes game on Tuesday. The Cranes take on Ghana, the team they played last and lost to in the finals of the Africa Cup of Nations in 1978. This is Uganda's first match at this level of the competition since then. The Uganda Cranes is the only team at the tournament from the CECAFA region. And it's all excitement and anticipation here. Peter?
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African Sports Nightline, Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
All over my body, I no go wipe. I no go wipe. Your kiss on my lips and onto my yes. Me are the life. Yes, I like. You don't mess me, rise me strongly. I don't lose my attention. Now you the bump and grind and wrap your hands round me like octopus. I'm gonna get me, I like your ginger. Mastercraft, wicked and white, golden finger. Everybody, they ask, oh, now who be the sing? This sing. It's Emma Sin, they call me sugar medicine. So no fear to climb by me. Night.
temperature rise. 400 Fahrenheit, baby, turn down the light. It's a new fight. So have no mercy on me, your rage on me. Oh, I owe me, take over me. Your mugging me, my land and me. Make me your maga, my body I don't surrender. Hey, before you descend on me, would you be my commander? Me and you against the world, turn it down, turn the light down. Down, 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 down.
Mind body slow,
I didn't like the way you did this
thing. Heart body slow.
Anybody call, I dey beg you, I don't turn off my light, no, let them call me one day after, cause this no be 10 minutes matter, everybody, yeah, 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 I see body, yeah, 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 what's it better, malanemi, malanemi, oh, why, why,
you dey make a dey wonder, dey sing, a dey dance, dey job, blow, job, like, yeah, you dey make a dey sing in my head, dey ring, dey rap, like, yeah.
Bimoshe lala, Bimoshe lo, they wanna know. Bimoshe kole, Bimoshe fresh, I'ma they wanna know. I'ma they wanna know. Keke de mo tingo, aboki wa sare, moda ba mo tun shawo, owo ti de no wo se se, oje si olo de, I'ma they wo de, oda I'ma they olo. Yeah, I be getting the Benjamin, yeah. Diamonds all over me, yeah. Plenty blessing they follow me, yeah. Every day we yeah. Every day we party come. Each other they fly by light. He make me happy come. Take care of my tingo. Oki was a guest. Oda ba mo tun shawo. Owo ti de no wo se se. Oje si olode. Omode olode. Oda omode olode.
Time when I hit the street, I be chasing this money. Fire upon my enemy.
Ebe le be ko samana, ebe le be ko samana. Ane ko devi domana, ebe le be ko samana.
Wani kwe ko sowo, omo chawale kalo wo. Talo di ko sowo, ati kekere mo tingo.
Ni kekere mo tingo. Aboki wa sare sese, oda gba mo tun shawo.
Alta play sound boy, Mr. Songs, Wayne, we the business. Baby, I don't get another sponsor.
Bada bang bang bang,
Salman Kweko. Nigerian breed, Asian breed. Everything I see, they make me ginger. She's beautiful, I know they desire. Everybody want to enter. Cotonou boys, you want to kwekwe. Indian boys, you want to kwekwe. London boys, you want to kwekwe. When it comes to Oroma. When it
God the glory.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music selection from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The dark clouds over the Gambia remain despite the best efforts of the 15-member ECOWAS group to mediate the situation to permit a peaceful transfer of power this Thursday. Last Friday, President Muhammad Buhari of Nigeria led an ECOWAS group meeting in Banjul, Gambia, with President Yahya Jammeh. President Jammeh refused to allow the changeover of government, arguing that until the Supreme Court hears his case, nothing will go forward. Now, we are aware that the Supreme Court has not yet got its full members, and therefore it is very surprising that reports have indicated that specific efforts were made in Nigeria to prevent the designated judges to go to Banjul to compose the Supreme Court for the hearing. Even if we agree that the Supreme Court may be a rubber stamp for President Jammeh, why don't allow him to exhaust what he considers is legal and political remedies? Because where do we go from here? already we know that he has taken some legislative and political steps to make it difficult for Mr. Adama Barrow to be inaugurated this Thursday. He has closed the borders of the Gambia with Senegal. He has closed radio stations and news outlets, and he has asked his lawyer to file a restraining order with the Supreme Court to prevent any inauguration ceremony this Thursday. So perhaps it may be better for us to exhaust all the political and legal remedies before contemplating what has been widely agreed to be the last resort, a military action. Now, after General Buhari was unable to convince President Yemi to step down, Mr. Adama Barrow traveled to Mali for further consultations with the ECOWAS members. We don't know what the outcome will be, but there is still room for political agreement. For example, one should not rule out the possibility that if the Supreme Court meets, it may provide a ladder to allow President Yemi to climb down and accept some kind of political arrangement. We have heard that in Nigeria, steps have been taken to make it possible for him to get an asylum. But knowing the case of Mr. Taylor and Nigeria, it may be very difficult to convince him to go to Nigeria. We also know that one of the problems that President Yemi and his military may be facing is what may have been a misstep by Mr. Barrow when, after he won the election, he announced that he would rescind President Yemi's order to withdraw from the ICC, an action really which was not contrary to the consensus within the African Union. Could there be any situation whereby agreement could be made to assure President Yemi and his military that they will not be dragged before the ICC? These are issues which should be seriously discussed between Mr. Barrow and the ECOWAS leaders, whether in Mali or somewhere else. But one thing we should all be aware of, one cannot take lightly the consequences of a military action in the Gambia. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Michael Dubinsky, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, parents give birth to the body of their children, but not always to their characters. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On the third Monday of each January, Americans honor the memory of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. King, a Baptist minister from the southern state of Alabama, was a leader in the U.S. civil rights movement, advocating social change through nonviolent means. On January 15th, he would have celebrated his 88th birthday. Believing that change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle, Dr. King organized and participated in mass action boycotts, sit-ins, peaceful marches, and other nonviolent acts of civil disobedience. Dr. King once stated that an individual who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust and who willingly accepts the penalty of imprisonment in order to arouse the conscience of the community over its injustice is in reality expressing the highest respect for the law. And so activists sometimes deliberately, but peacefully and respectfully, broke laws aimed at segregating the white citizenry from the non-white, thus hoping to bring attention to the inherent unfairness of such legislation. Thus, when a black seamstress named Rosa Parks broke the law in Montgomery, Alabama, by refusing to give up her seat on a bus to a white passenger and subsequently was jailed for her transgression, her plight generated national attention and increasing sympathy for her cause across the country. Dr. King was 39 years old when he died by an assassin's bullet on April 4, 1968. But his legacy lives on. In the fullness of time, segregationist laws were repealed. Discrimination is a legally punishable and punished offense. And even as we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and enormous contribution to society, Barack Obama, the first ever African-American U.S. president, is just finishing his second term in office. I never thought in my lifetime that I would see one of us aspiring to the head of our nation, said Martin Luther King Jr.'s eldest sister, Dr. Christine King Ferris. Mr. Obama leading us toward the presidency is like the promised land for us. Dr. King's life is well summed up in his own words. The quality, not the longevity of one's life, is what is important.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.